Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar. Or am I? Because it might be a spy or a double spy or a triple spy.
Or a triple spy. You never know. There could be so many. Well, I hope you are because I need you to wingman me on this week's episode because we are actually going to be guest appearing on our favorite people, Prime Cut Pod Guys podcast this week. So yeah,
we love them.
We're super stoked. We do. Yeah, we do love them. So we're joining them. As you guys know, it's Action April for us, and the stars just aligned that they wanted to do Atomic Blonde. So we're going to pop over there and chat with them about it.
Yeah, my first time seeing this one, and it was, you'll see, it was something.
It's not my first time, and I do actually also own this movie. So I was like ready to go, but I haven't seen it. Gosh, it has to be like easily five years, something like that. So it was a nice revisit. It was a good time.
Yeah. For those of you that don't know, if you're thinking about starting this episode and like you haven't seen this, it's basically like a John Wick-esque, right? With like a spy thriller thrown in there. But really good action sequences. I'll give it that. Really good action sequences.
Yeah, same co-director of John Wick 1. And also, funnily enough, Keanu Reeves and Charlize Theron were training at the same time. He was training for John Wick 2. So they ended up being sparring partners in training for these
both of
these
films. Wonder who the better student was in class. Like, who was the teacher's pet?
I bet it was her, you know, because she's a dancer. Dancers pick up those moves, you know, like the routines, the choreography. I bet it was her. My money's on Charlize. So anyways, we're going to pop over there. It's going to feel the format's going to be a little different today as per usual, but we wanted to take a quick sec to one, give you the download, but then also tell you what we will be drinking over there. So what are we drinking?
Yeah, we may or may not have forgotten to introduce the drink on their pod because we're following their format, you know, so that's on us. But yeah, so this is pretty easy to make, and it's been a while since I did a Shandy. And so really all you need is your favorite Pilsner, or maybe a Pilsner that you don't love because you're going to be diluting it. So you take a Pilsner, you do half a glass of that, whatever you're drinking out of, and then you top it off with lemonade. And then we added a half ounce of Saint Germain, which adds more of a florally thing. So it's really good. It's a really refreshing beverage. It's, you know, you get a little bit of beer, a little bit of lemonade, and a little bit of Saint Germain. It works together real well. And we're calling it the Atomic Shandy.
The Atomic Shandy. I thought it was a real cute, clever name, again, from Craft World. So mix it up and check it out and let us know what you think. But for now, we'll pop over there.
Joe, Greg, how much do you know about the Berlin Wall?
I think I know a pretty good amount.
Could you explain to me the fall of the Berlin Wall as if it were taking place in Texas?
The fall?
Yeah.
Sure. You want me to do that now?
Yeah. Explain it to me.
Imagine 6th Street. One day you woke up and there was a huge wall built there.
Okay.
And everyone on the east side could not go to the west side and vice versa.
Well, I don't really see a problem with that.
Well, that's what one side thought in Germany as well, except for the other side didn't agree.
Wait,
and eventually it fell.
So the west side were like, no, we want to go to the east side. And the east side was like, no, you can keep your jackalope and hang out over there.
Yeah, except you would switch that in Germany. The west is better.
Oh, so the jackalope is on the east side in Germany.
Yeah, the west has TVs and the east does not.
Oh, got it.
So.
That makes sense.
Were you confused during this movie because of that?
Well, we're covering Atomic Blonde this week, and it shows so many clips of the Berlin Wall and the fall of it. And correct me if I'm wrong, but David Hasselhoff is the reason why the wall was brought down, right?
And he's mentioned in this movie.
So what would be the equivalent of that in Texas? Like riffraff brings down the wall or something?
McConaughey.
McConaughey brings down the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it.
I chose this life. And someday, it's going to get me killed. But not today.
Lorraine Broughton, expert in intelligence collection and hand-to-hand combat.
Agent Gascoigne was killed last night. Did you know him?
Enough to say hello.
He had an atomic bomb of information. Find out who's hunting our operatives and trust no one.
So with that, welcome into the Prime Cut Podcast, a movie discussion show aimed at recommending deep cuts, flawed gems, and forgotten masterpieces. Greg, we also have guest hosts again.
Guest vocals. Gang vocals.
Recurring gang vocals. This is our third episode.
I think it's the third
collab.
Yeah, we drink and we watch things, folks. Mackenzie Lamar, welcome aboard.
I just want to know, what are we now?
I feel like we're going
steady. We're going steady.
Yeah. Oh my God.
We're on the same fucking page. Jinx.
Wow.
It's like we do a podcast together. I don't know. Yeah. It's weird.
Got it.
But it's nice to be back a second time though, because like the pressure's off. I feel like the first time we did this, I really felt the need to perform and like land with your listeners. And now I'm going to tie off. This is a heroin friendly podcast, right? I'm settled in. Let's do this.
I did not feel that pressure at all. So I don't know if that helped or hurt. The first couple times, but somehow we're back. Thanks for having us.
You're back. You guys selected this movie from our
list. Right? Yeah, I feel like this has been a multi-month conversation though, so I kind of vaguely remember.
Yeah, and we hope that it fits into your not resume, maybe your CV.
I think this month they're doing action. Tell us what you're doing over at We Drink and We Watch Things.
Yes, it's plugging right in. We're doing Action April. So this is our second to last entry, right, Lamar, for the month, I think?
Yeah,
so.
And we're doing one from like almost every decade. So it worked out really well that this one's in what, the 10s, 2010s?
Yeah. We started in the 70s with French Connection. So that one's already out. And we're getting ahead of the game actually.
What else are y'all doing for this month?
Boondock Saints, Escape from New York. What else? What am I missing?
Bullet
Lamar?
Train, which is Bullet same Train. Director. We didn't realize it when we picked it.
Yeah.
I was like, Bullet we need one from the 2020s. And same director as this.
Yeah. So tell us where we can find you, please.
You can find us anywhere you get podcasts. We Drink and We Watch Things. You can also find us on our socials with the same header. We usually are most active on Instagram. We have a TikTok that no one looks at, even us. And then you can get us on YouTube now. So if you want to do the video portion, I know you can do that on Spotify, but if you're not a Spotify subscriber, you can watch all of our video pods on YouTube.
Yep.
That was Greg. That was so much better of a pitch.
Whoa.
Job every week, so he's got it.
I was going to say, that's just because Mackenzie made me memorize it and do it every episode.
Man, that was good. We're usually like, I don't know, TikTok, we got something there.
We might be hanging out at the mall.
You can email us. Send us an email.
We're setting up a booth for autographs. No one showed up to the last one, but I'm really hoping that people will show up. Guys,
they will.
Giving out autographs, we've got a producer, Mark, but he's got some technical issues with his audio. So we're just going to be asking him questions and then assuming what his answer will be for this episode.
Is that going to be the rotation? Like we just all answer for Mark? Everybody just
Yeah. So we can ask producer Mark and Lamar will go first, Mackenzie you go second, then Joe, and then myself. And we'll just take turns answering questions of what we think he
Mark
would
impression.
Say.
Yeah. Like speaking of impressions, when you guys said the thing about the wall on 6th Street and McConaughey bringing it down, I wanted somebody to try and nail it of like, hey, Mr. Abbott, if you could bring that wall down, that'd be all right, you know?
Oh, my God.
Somebody top that. That wasn't that good, but somebody needs to.
That's pretty
good.
Great. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like somebody.
Your turn, Mackenzie.
I can't do better. I'm not saying that.
Thought it was pretty good.
Yeah,
in the moment, not bad.
I can do a lot of impressions, but I can't do McConaughey. That's not one that I've practiced much. And everyone always busts out by just dropping the all right is like the giveaway.
I was going to say that's the default. Like that's how you know it's him for sure.
That's So even if you do it bad, if you just throw that in there, you're like, oh, that's a McConaughey impression.
Everybody knows. Yes. It's a laugh. Yep.
Greg, did we do our stuff? TikTok, whatever?
Yeah, yeah. Find us TikTok, Instagram, Gmail.
Is it still going?
All of it's still going. Yeah. Yeah.
They got another 75-day extension.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Sale. Yeah.
We're trying to put stuff on YouTube, but we're slow to do that. We have stuff. We just haven't put it all up yet. Right, Greg?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's.
Do you feel shame because we haven't put it up yet?
You know, let's ask producer Mark. Lamar, you can answer. You can answer the first one. When will we have the videos up, producer Mark?
We should be having them up in maybe 2 to 3 weeks. Yes, I feel much shame for not having them up yet.
Oh, that's great. See, there you go. You got your answer.
Okay, great.
Wow.
So that's where you can find us.
Yes.
So let's talk about, as usual, we're going to go through two of our, I guess, our star, kind of the second banana, our director. But I think this is very interesting that you guys are doing Action April, because this, I think our star has had quite possibly one of the greatest action runs recently with this and Fury Road. Mm-hmm. These are like, to me, very high level. She's like asked to do a lot, and I think like is incredibly good at it.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's many people that are this dependable at a high level. Greg, I don't know.
Yeah. What do you think? You know, I've got three factoids that I'm bringing to this podcast in regards to this movie. And okay.
Only three, and then he's out.
Yes,
you put them all out here right now.
No. I'm going to sprinkle them through. Yes, you're right. Charlize Theron has transitioned into being a badass action star, which is very cool. And during this movie, she did all of her own stunts, all of her own fight sequences, and she cracked 4 teeth and had to have surgery to fix them. Factoid number one.
Okay.
She did very good. Almost all her own stunts. There are two she almost. Didn't.
There's
almost,
one that she didn't.
Yeah.
There's two. Okay. Okay.
One was the sex scene.
Well, look. So Charlie's South African. I recall her as a adolescent being a very strikingly good-looking woman who was unafraid to. She embraced her own skin. Let's say that early on in her career,
mm-hmm.
and. She went on to win an Oscar for Monster, which is she does not look like herself in that movie, but great performance. And then it's like, I think, I don't know if she was just wanted to be challenged or was trying new stuff, but she's in, you know, two, I think this movie and Fury Road from an action standpoint are pretty high level of the last 10 years. And she's in both of them.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to think about action movies from the last 10 years. And obviously John Wick comes to mind, and that's tied into this series. And and not including superhero movies, just action movies. And there wasn't a lot that came to mind that really stuck out.
I put The Raid up there. I think The Raid was definitely last decade, and that's a pretty quality one.
Raid solid.
Yeah, and I think Raid, I prefer The Raid 2, even though I think they're both incredible. But yeah, and those are not American movies, and they are straight action, right? Like that is like, that's what we're here for. I'm an action guy. This is my thing. I will watch a C+ movie that has A+ fights. I think this is like, and Greg, I think we should go to our category. This to me is like a B+ movie with strong A fights. This is a flawed gem.
Okay. It's a flawed gem for me as well. I think that this movie, the criticism it received was that the plot line was hard to follow, and I'll agree with that. And,
so will I.
And the fight scenes were spread out all over the place, and they were kind of just like random. Now, I don't have any issue with that. I think every movie needs more fight scenes, always. Yes. I don't care what the movie is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, guys, team. Do we like this movie?
I think it's a great time, personally. Have learned about myself. Well, I shouldn't say I've learned. Like, I observed this recently to Lamar. I was, like, looking at my wall of movies, and we were trying to plan Action April. And I was like, I have a lot of action movies. Like, I am also maybe an action person because I am having the best fucking time this month. And, yeah, this is a fun one. I agree with the plot thing, though. Plot's a little janky here and there.
Convoluted.
A little convoluted. A little bit
unnecessarily
much.
Convoluted.
Yes.
Yeah. Unnecessarily.
Not need so many twists.
Okay. And we're using code names that both sound they start with the same. They didn't really. Spyglass and Satchel are the two code names. Like, all right, well, which ones? Now what?
Spyglass is a person, and Satchel is also a person.
Yes.
That's a problem.
And that's thrown around a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
This is my first time seeing this. I just finished it this morning, actually. And I was on board. I won't say that I loved it. I enjoyed it, especially the action sequences, like you said, are top tier. That one sequence for 15, 20 minutes was worth the price of admission. $4 I spent on Amazon for this. But
you paid for it?
Yeah.
Wow.
It wasn't streaming. It feels like I got 18 streaming services.
I own it.
And anytime we do a movie, I have to find it and pay for it.
You could have logged into mine. I own it. We've talked about this. Anyway, I'm just impressed you paid for it.
Yeah. So I got there anyway. But I would say that despite that, the action scenes are great. The rest of the movie is very uneven. It's like, it was like a not very compelling spy thriller to me.
Agreed.
Yeah. And it's like the trappings of it are really good. Cold War.
Yeah.
I'm in. Good soundtrack, even though most of the songs were not in this era. They were like early 80s. This is late 80s.
Except for one that was after the movie, but anyway.
The Public Enemy song. Mm-hmm. There's no Cure music in this, which I was like, you couldn't throw one Cure song. Okay, fine. But it's like that. I think that was good. Mm-hmm. But it almost felt like the movie ended and they wanted to add a little bit and they weren't sure what they were doing with the double cross and the triple cross and who's a double agent and is she a triple agent or is she not? And again, not bad, but there was just, we're a lot too many cooks in the kitchen. Maybe
I
don't know.
Did you guys read the graphic novel or the book that this was based on? Cause I didn't.
I was going to say we don't get into the source material. Yeah.
So factoid number two, this movie is based off of.
Oh shit. Greg only has two factoids.
You might be done.
The Coldest City, 2012 graphic novel. Yeah, so this was a graphic novel. Man, you guys, I was planning to sprinkle them throughout the podcast.
You should have just done them all up front.
I've got one left, and I promise no one's going to guess this.
Okay, hold on to it.
I don't know.
So, I mean, I think that I always am curious as to when actors decide to take a turn into like the action realm from someone who's like more of a dramatic actor. Why do they do that? Are they bored? Is it a money thing? And it seems like that, you know, I get the feeling that Charlize was like, wanted to be challenged in some interviews that I read. She's like preparing a lot. And it just, which I can appreciate because I like to see someone who's serious about an action role who maybe doesn't come from an action background. Mm-hmm. And I think that she looks great in this movie. Greg, we're going to get into some. The apartment fight scene when they're trying to get across the Berlin Wall is obviously the crowning achievement of this movie.
That's like you're really, talking about really the fight scene towards the end of the movie, right?
Yeah, when she's got spyglass and they're trying to cross.
Yeah, yeah. Great. That's the best part of the whole movie.
Absolutely. Yes, and we'll talk about it. It's very good. But I do really respect when someone who's like, hey, I've got an Oscar. I've done all these roles. I mean, she's done so many good movies. I was just looking through her IMDb. I forgot she was in The Road. She's so good in that. One of the most depressing movies. She's his wife. And in the flashbacks, like, she is so great. And it's fun to see someone be like, hey, I'm going to try this new thing. Even though she was in a Fast and Furious movie, unfortunately.
Yeah. Hey, Mark McKenzie, what did you think about her role in Fast and the Furious?
I think it's similar to this, actually. I think it's like it's giving some of the same energy, the same Fast and the Furious energy. I thought she was great in it, but that's because I love Fast and the Furious. Me, Mark.
Oh, God. That's
Mark. Right.
Nailed it. Okay. Yes. Perfect.
Nailed it. Great. It was so awesome. That's Mark. I'm going to take some shots while he's off there. Anyway, so she does in 2015, she does Fury Road, which is really her first like leap into an action movie. That's like an unbelievable action movie. All practical.
Didn't she do Aeon Flux?
Yeah, she did. That's true.
And then don't forget the Italian Job.
I was going to say, she did Italian Job. She also did...
I don't know if I consider Italian Job. That's like a heist film, and there's some car chases in it, but I never thought of that as an action movie.
Well, she did Hancock, y'all. Yeah. Obviously. She just gave superhero vibes in Hancock.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Okay,
fun fact, so she can do one, it. That was two different movie scripts crammed together, and that's why the final product fucking sucked. Because the first half is really good, and then the second half, you're like, what is going on? Literally two scripts. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But basically, Fury Road, I think... it was successful. It allowed this movie to get made because it was compelling enough. And people were like, okay, she can green light a movie. And if she's going to be in an action movie, she's believable. And that I think takes us to the director of this movie, David Leitch, which Greg, we need to talk about him. The quick rundown on him is he is a career stuntman. I believe that he doubled for
Brad Pitt.
I think he doubled for Brad Pitt in Troy a lot. His partner was Chad Stahelski, who's the John Wick guy. He and Chad Stahelski co-directed John Wick 1. Mm-hmm. They're martial artists. They are career stuntmen. So fights and action is very important to them, obviously. And that's why I think their studio, which is 8711 Productions, is probably the best stunt studio that's working in the last 10 years. After John Wick, I think they are still partners, but they don't direct together anymore.
They're producing partners,
Yeah, okay, producing partners. Stahelski stays with all the John Wick franchises. He's continuing to direct those. David Leitch goes on to direct Deadpool 2, which I actually liked.
Same.
Liked it.
Yeah.
Didn't think I was going to like it. Didn't love the new one, but I liked 2. What else did he direct, Greg? Bullet Fall Train, Guy. You guys are covering that.
Yep.
Fall Guy recently. Mm-hmm. Hobbs and Shaw, which is garbage.
Hold on. Hey, Mark, Joe, what did you think of Hobbs and Shaw?
Oh, man, Hobbs and Shaw. It's got Statham. It's got The Rock. What else could you ask for? It's so money. Right. That's Mark.
That was pretty good.
I think it sucks, though. It really sucks. But at the same time, he seems to be, and maybe Stahelski's going to get there. He's definitely like going towards a more big budget, studio driven, franchise style action movie. And this was the first one where I think it was a little grittier, and he was coming off of John Wick 1. He's got Charlize. He can still kind of play in his own sandbox, and he's not really transitioning over to like, hey, I'm doing a Marvel movie, or hey, I'm doing, well, I guess it wasn't Marvel at the time, but I'm doing a superhero movie. I'm doing The Fall Guy, which I liked. I wanted to like it more, but I did like it. And I think
we're about to have our first fight. I'm going to be honest with you.
That movie was good.
I liked it.
I'm with Joe. I think we did an episode on this and you were real gung-ho and I was like, it was fine. It was a fine movie.
Yeah.
Whatever. I did the deep dive on the stunts, and if you do the deep dive on the stunts, then it's a fucking fabulous time. So
I wanted more stunts. I want more stunts. But that movie works because the two leads are extremely charismatic and very good. Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt. So it's great. I think when you have a person at the who's directing a film who is invested in this case, action, you're generally going to get good action, especially if they have a lot of control. Mm-hmm. To me, when I watched Hobbs, I was pumped for Hobbs and Shaw because I'm like, man, I don't like these Fast and Furious movies, but they got the John Wick guy. It's going to be good. And it was just like, someone told him he couldn't do this or couldn't do that. It felt like. Whereas in this movie, they're like, hey, do what you want. You want a 20-minute fight scene where it's going to look like it's a one-shot. It's not. It's stitched together, but it's seamlessly cut. It's incredibly visceral, very violent. She's fighting five guys. It's really awesome. Yeah, we're not going to cut that out. Do it. Go ahead. Do your thing. And so I think that helped in this movie, because if that stuff isn't in this movie, it probably sinks a little bit down in its quality. As we were talking about, the story's kind of tough. It's a little bit more flash than meat. more sizzle than steak, but the fight's really elevated.
Yeah, if it didn't have those that sequence, the car chase immediately after that until they go into the river or whatever, and then the final, I thought the slow motion shootout in like the last 10 minutes was pretty damn good too. If it didn't have those three sequences, this movie would be a huge waste of time.
Agreed.
I'm not joking when I say the action was like the main reason I showed up to the table for this.
100%. If you're looking for like great spy intrigue or good double crossing and great acting and what's going on with this plot and good twists, that's not what this is. But this kind of thinks that it has that, but it's not really what we're doing.
But he also said that out of the gate. Even when he pitched it to Charlize, he was like, I want this to feel like an 80s punk movie, like music video with some killer fight scenes. And he he was like, I don't want to do this noir, you know, 60s style spy thriller. Like, I want it to feel like 80s punk rock music video. And I feel like with that goal in mind, he crushed it, right? Like, he's not trying to be Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. He's trying to be like a music video, and he gives all those vibes.
Yeah. And he does one of the title cards early on is like, kind of gives you the overview of a little bit of the Cold War, the Berlin Wall. And then very quickly he says, with another title card over top of it, like a stenciled spray paint, like, we're not telling that story, which is basically, here's the backdrop. It's serious, but this movie is not that serious. Mm-hmm. This is what we're going to do.
So I can summarize, if you haven't seen Atomic Blonde, I can summarize the whole plot here in probably like two or three sentences. And then that's the movie for the most part. So it's a movie about some spies that are trying to find someone named Satchel so they can get to someone named Spyglass. And Spyglass has a list of spies that are currently hidden undercover. And if that were to get out, that would be catastrophic. That's the movie.
Double agents specifically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Double agent. Satchel's a double agent.
Satchel is a double agent, and Satchel is a person. Spyglass is a person.
Yeah, and Satchel is played by our other, you know, I guess second lead, which is James McAvoy. Mm-hmm. Scott.
What do you all know him from?
I mean, we were talking beforehand on like the newer X-Men, Professor X. I think that's probably what everyone recognizes him from, but he's done so much.
That's probably his biggest role. That and then Split, probably.
Mm-hmm. Split, Wanted. I feel like he started his career as kind of like an actor's actor.
Yeah.
Taking like prestigious roles, and then he's moving more into like mainstream stuff. He's good. He seems to have fun in this movie. He's got a good wardrobe. He drives a Porsche. Pretty awesome. I don't know.
I will say though, he is not Satchel. He's David Percival.
Oh, I thought he was.
Well, help me make fucking sense of this, because
is Satchel.
The format of it sucks.
Oh, she is. That's right.
She is Satchel.
She makes them think he is Satchel, but at the end it turns out she was Satchel the whole time. And that just opened this, it broke my brain, that like second and third twist at the end. First off, I hated, but at the beginning I was like, I don't like that we're debriefing after everything has happened, because it gives away some of the stuff that would have made the spy concept more intriguing. Like, it's like, mm-hmm. we know Percival's a traitor from the beginning of the movie almost. She basically tells us 15 minutes in. So their whole dynamic early on, you're like, well, eventually he's going to betray her. That kind of takes the fun out of it. And then when it finally does happen, then we find out, oh no, she's been not only lying to the Russians, but also lying to the English. And she is an American spy. And it just, then it throws in that whole, is it an unreliable narrator? Can I trust everything that I watched to this point? Or was that all bullshit Usual Suspect style?
But I think that's the point. Like, I think you're supposed to question whether or not he's actually going to betray her, because it is so obvious at the beginning, and he ends up not really being the bad guy. Yes, he's out for himself, but he's not betraying her in that sense. He sees that she's on the list. He sees that it's her. And so how much is he actually betraying her at the end of the day? He just wants to survive. And he says that multiple times. Like, at the end of the day, I'm here to survive, and I fucking love Berlin, right? Like, I think he actually comes out not really being the bad guy. And it's, I mean, that's,
he does kill
to be the
that one French spy for no real reason.
Just why did he do that?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense. Because
it's
me.
In the script.
She knew that he was selling the list to
Bremkov or whatever his name is. Yeah.
Yeah.
She had
But how did he know that she knew?
She called him and threatened him. I think that's, oh, that's the right. implication she's is she's threatening him with the information she has. And so he's like, well, I can't let that get out. Because, again, it was like an opportunistic move, but it was against a double agent. So, or at the end of the day, a triple agent.
I did laugh when she stabbed him in like the weird angle of like the back of his
the
shoulder.
The one spot you can't reach like, have an itch it. There.
Yeah, that was funny.
I don't know about you guys, but like the first thing I do after I get off of like a threatening phone call against another spy that wants to kill me is I put on my Walkman.
Yeah.
Start pumping some tunes real loud.
Yeah, for sure.
Brilliant.
For sure.
Maybe go through.
In my underwear,
through,
no less.
Yeah, go for a run through some woods, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
Like, hey, before we get too far into this, I got to mention this because, and I did some research.
Is it your third factoid?
Nope, that's not the third factoid. Okay. We're saving that for later. No one gets to steal that one from me.
Now I just want somebody to steal it by accident. Anyway,
I'm going
to
be so mad if someone does. So Atomic Blonde 2. So we were doing some research and it popped up. I was like, wait, is there a sequel happening to this? Absolutely. And so I guess in 2020, Netflix acquired the rights to Atomic Blonde and they were going to do, they were going to bring back Charlize Theron, John Goodman, the whole shebang. But, I guess it just got too many hands in the cookie jar. And like, so it created this situation where it was too hard to, push forward the project. So as of right now, it's still in development, but nothing is happening from what I can tell, which sucks.
Do we want a two? Like, again, this is a great time. I'm just curious. Does anybody want a two?
I want a two if it's directed by this guy with this same template of like high octane fights. I don't care what really happens in the movie personally, but if it's somebody else, no, don't give me no.
Right. If he comes back, I'd watch it for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I feel like, what is he doing now? Is he doing a sequel to Bullet Train?
I don't need that either.
I don't think so.
He's pushing for like, he seems to be like looking to continue to climb into like franchise level stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's like, I'm not doing this. I'm not coming back for this. Thanks. I had fun, but no. In which case I don't want to watch a second version of it. Mm. Greg, in the beginning of this movie, to Lamar's point, we are doing the thing where it's like 4 days earlier and we are kind of jumping back and she is explaining, she's basically debriefing with her handlers what happened, what occurred during this time frame. She takes an ice bath, which looks very cold. Cool. I like the kind of blue light they're using, like neon stuff. Good stuff. David Bowie, Cat People, good song playing. Mm-hmm. She does pour a drink with ice in it.
She pulls the ice from her own ice bath.
Where's the ice coming from?
No.
Yeah, it's like, and I get it. There's people that want to drink Charlize Theron's bathwater, and apparently she does too.
This is giving salt burn right now.
Salt burn.
It's giving salt burn.
Yeah, that definitely, I thought of that here in the first part of this because I was like, ooh, what are we doing with this ice bath? But the idea is that she is running down what happened in this.
Days. She's retelling the story of what's happened over the last few days. That's basically sets us up for the movie. And that's what we go into.
I've got a little factoid for you.
It better not be mine.
I don't think it is. But so the guy who's running in the beginning.
Yes.
I know your factoid, Joe.
Okay. The British agent who's running away. Mm-hmm. He gets murdered in the first few minutes. Mm-hmm. That's Sam Hargrave, who is actually Chris Evans's stuntman for a lot of the Captain America movies. And he's in that 8711 tree of like stunt people. He's also the Extraction 1 and 2 director. I don't know if you saw those movies, Greg, with Chris Hemsworth. They're pretty good. Pretty good action movies. The first one specifically, I think, is good. And so he was like doing a favor, like, yeah, I'll be this guy. I'll play this guy for a few minutes. But again, that's a good sign because it's like we have this stable of good action people and they're going to be in these movies. They're going to be behind the camera and in front of the camera, which means the product's usually pretty good, except for Hobbs and Shaw.
To add on to your factoid, Joe, he's also a camera operator. And he operates the camera in the stairwell scene because he was the only person who could do the fall and protect the camera at the same time.
Awesome.
And he's the lead stunt coordinator for the film. So yeah.
Awesome.
He's a gem.
I knew he did
guy.
That for, yeah, he did that for Extraction. Cause there's a mm-hmm. one shot in Extraction that's very complex. And I
Which
knew that
that's
he
a
was
10
the guy
minute
behind the camera.
Take. It's a 10 minute single take and he does the camera work for the whole scene. Yeah. It's wild.
He's awesome.
Well, now I feel like I need to bring a factoid. So here's mine.
Okay.
I read one thing online that said,
this better not be mine. This better not be
Charlize
mine.
Charlize drinks Stoli throughout the whole film. That's actually a clue to the ending. Yeah. That the ending's not going to make any fucking sense. That's my factoid.
Yeah, because if she was drinking Stoli, she'd be Russian. It's kind of like the, have you guys seen No Way Out?
Mm-mm. No.
Don't think so, actually.
Okay, I won't say anything then. But that's a throwback. That's a callback to No Way Out. No Way Out is has a similar dichotomy to it. Cold mm-hmm. War, Kevin Costner, Gene Hackman. It's a great movie,
oh,
but
I
there's
seen
a little.
That. It's been a while. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There's a little. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of that in there. Mm-hmm. So
wait. So you're saying that the Stoli vodka was like a red herring?
It's supposed to give away.
I'm making a joke about it. I think people in retrospect are like, look, we should have known the whole time
oh
she was
God.
Working with them because it's this that she's drinking the whole. I don't give a shit. I think that's just like you finishing the movie and being like, look, she was drinking that.
What if at the end of the movie, instead of drinking Stoli vodka, she was drinking like Tennessee
Bud
whiskey?
Light.
Oh, Bud Light.
I mean, that would make sense. But that would inform properly how the movie ends, but this doesn't.
Right.
I do think it's a red herring, though. I do. They pay enough attention to it that I think it's supposed to make you suspect her as this Russian spy. But it doesn't end up making sense.
So this director likes to do multiple things like that, where we get zoom ins on things. So we get a zoom in on the vodka when she's in. What's the guy's name? David Percival. When she's in, when they're in Percival's apartment, we see a Machiavelli book, and it's kind of zoomed in. Did y'all catch that?
Machiavelli.
Yeah, yeah. And then they quote it shortly after that, right?
Yeah.
She does. He quotes it, and then she
and she calls it out. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, there's a whole bunch of things where, like, you get little zoom ins on things like that to draw attention to things. Is what I was picking up.
How do we like her accent?
Which one?
I don't know
like,
any better.
Which one?
I was like, come on.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm an accent snob. I was like, come on, Charlize. You can do better.
It's okay.
This. You got an Oscar.
It's fine. You know.
Give me something. She said she's saying like, I can't. Like, okay, we can do. I could do that. Like, get some dialect coaches going here. Come on.
I want right. a golden goose, Daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But you know what? That goes back to, that's why we're not here for that. I should say that to myself. I'm looking in the mirror. I'm like, we're not here for that. We're not. We're here for the action, Greg.
Talk to yourself. You, man.
Well, in relation, though, to what Greg was saying about the director's style, one thing I did really like about this was sort of just the visual style of it. I would have to rewatch it to see if I was picking up on this right, but didn't it always feel like every time we were in West Germany, everything was neon and bright and like really big neon signs, reds, greens, yeah. blues. And anytime you're in East Germany, it is like whitewashed, gray,
bland,
dark. And it's, I like that visual sort of like showcase of the two different places.
That was a cool effect.
I think this movie looks great and it's filmed in Europe. They didn't say it was filmed in Berlin, although I'm guessing maybe some of it was, but I'm sure they
filmed all over,
like,
but some in Berlin. Yeah. And that tunnel scene, yeah. that's all in Berlin.
Which was also in the one of the
Captain America movie.
Yeah.
And Civil Hunger War, Games, actually. It's a very
they
popular
like that,
tunnel.
Really. They yeah. like that okay. tunnel.
It's a popular tunnel.
It's a good one.
Greg, do we want to go through the plot here or is it even worth it?
Okay, so here's
you mean the really confusing plot that won't make
yes.
any sense?
Yeah, like, I don't even know if we should do it.
I'm going to walk you through the plot. Up. I'm going to walk you through it. And I normally make bullet points throughout the whole movie and I can kind of walk you through it. But about an hour into this movie, I looked at my notes and it was like 5 bullet points.
Yeah.
I was like, what is going on? How am I just like, am I just spacing out or why am I not, is there no plot? What is happening? Who are these people and what are they doing? So I'll walk you through some
doing
scenes
some
that
shit.
We got to talk about this. She gets picked up in a car at one point. And who are the people in the car, Joe?
Well, they're not who they're supposed to be.
So she's supposed to be getting picked up by allies.
Yeah.
And then
I don't really know, but they're not the right ones.
They're them.
They'll tell you. They're like, oh, these are just like KGB agents that are there.
Got it.
They know her.
Okay.
They've made
She beats the shit out of some dudes with her shoe.
Her Dior heel. Don't get it twisted. She's the Dior lady, so it makes sense.
Oh, yeah. And there, you know what? There is a little Dior in her dresser. Drawer.
Yep.
Yeah. Greg, did you catch that?
Yeah. It was funny. When I saw her taking the shoe off, I was like, don't tell me she's going to beat this dude with the shoe or like stab the stiletto through his neck.
Oh, yeah. I liked it.
I love
it. The crash scene when she like whips the steering wheel and then pulls the seatbelt over herself. Pretty cool.
Yeah. There's little things. I feel like, you know, because we've been doing a lot of action movies in a row this month, you see how, and we, even when Mackenzie, when we did the Maltese Falcon, I told you, I hate in older action movies when it's like somebody's got them at gunpoint, whether it's James Bond or Humphrey Bogart or whoever, and they just go, nah, and pull the gun and sock him in the mouth. I fucking hate that.
It's boring.
I feel like in modern action, you really have to earn a lot of this stuff to be sort of inventive. And the little thing that she did in that scene was when the guy in the front has the gun and she disarms him with this sneaky good move, and you have to pay attention to their actual hands to see what she does, but it looks realistic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very visceral. In you're in tight in the car in the backseat. Good stuff. Great stuff.
I think it's great, but the premise is a problem, right? Like, she's this triple threat spy and she's getting into a rando's car. Like, I'm sorry, you do not, hey, he's running late, he sent me to get you, and you have no other questions. Like, I was just like,
I don't want to keep harping on the ending, and we can just get this flat out. Do you guys trust that everything we see in the movie is actually what happened?
I did.
Oh, you mean,
if that's the case, did she call them and say, you're going to pick up this English spy and you're going to try to kill her, so she knows it's coming?
Oh,
because wouldn't it have been her that betrayed herself in that case?
Yeah.
It wasn't Percival, I don't think, at that point. But
I think the implication is, well, I think the implication later is supposed to be that Percival let them know.
See, this,
but then he's
this,
following her and like picks her up and is like, get in my car. And why couldn't he just shoot her right then and there?
I think
he was trying to eliminate her from the equation. And if she survived, he had to then work around her, you know, which is what he ends up doing.
You really messed up my whole thought process here, Lamar, because like, I hadn't even thought like, oh, the story she's retelling, is that even a real story? Because we know that she's a spy at the end. Like, she was just, she
I was like, so.
And then, and then I beat his ass with my shoe.
I was really cool. Turns out none of that one-shotter, semi-one-shotter even happened. Wasn't as cool as
she though. Makes a couple mistakes, though, that she shares. So it makes me think that she is telling the whole story, because there's a couple things that get her into trouble. I mean, she shouldn't have killed Percival to begin with, right? And at the very end, she tells him that she straight up killed him. So I think she could have pinned that on anybody else in all that mayhem, right? Like, it's the night the Berlin Wall falls, but she says that she did it. So I get the impression that we are seeing what happened.
I honestly didn't think that much into it, because I was like, oh, that apartment fight scene was cool.
He was so distracted by the apartment
fight
scene.
Do you know what's great? These action sequences. Do you know what I can zero?
Pretty much.
No notes. Plot.
I just want Greg to tell us his plot real quick so we can talk about the action.
Okay. Before we move the story forward, there's a whole thing for the listeners of something that's taken grown in popularity. It's so strange. It started in Kansas. It's called, I think they're calling it car jitsu. They basically are having jiu-jitsu tournaments where they both are in the front seat of a car. They're both buckled in, and the referee goes, fight. And then they just start fighting right there in the car. And guys are using like seat belts to choke each other. And I guess the real strategy here is, like, as soon as the fight starts, pro tip, reach for the other person's seatbelt so they can't unbuckle themselves.
I mean,
did you say it started in Kansas?
Yeah, out in Manhattan that's where it started. So all those videos you see online,
I thought it was Russia.
No, Russia does do a lot of crazy stuff. They'll do like MMA basketball and stuff.
They're innovating in Russia. They do it in a moving car. So.
There you go.
So we get
that fight. Oh, right, okay, Greg.
Yeah. So then the next thing that happens, and this was very confusing to me. I need someone to explain to me this. We've got like a bunch of punk rockers lined up with a skateboard and like a boombox, and dude basically. You ever seen the movie Kids?
Yeah.
Yeah. It reminds me of the movie Kids. Lamar, you've never seen this?
I've heard it's really depressing. Right?
It is. It's very depressing. Yes. But in the movie, they beat someone up with a skateboard. And that's probably the only other time I've seen someone beat up with a skateboard in a movie.
Well, so that was basically, that whole scene is, they're in East Berlin, which is the communist half of Berlin, controlled by the East German police and the Soviets. So capitalism is not allowed there. So that was that scene beforehand is a black market scene where, like, they're selling clothes and electronics and stuff like that. They're listening to popular music. And that's where James McAvoy is we see him like trying to get information as like the head of the station chief of Berlin for MI6. After that, the beating scene where we meet Bremovich, who's the KGB official, that is them learning that this list is out in the open and we're trying to find it. And we think that it was at this black market and he's interrogating those people. That's why that happens.
Okay. That makes sense. And then the next scene we get is Lorraine, basically Charlize Theron's character, identifying a body, and it's the body of the guy from the beginning of the movie, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's something that we didn't mention here at the beginning of the movie. When that guy was killed, they take his watch. And they don't really explain why they took it. You don't get that till later, and you're going to be so mad when you find out why. it's kind of dumb. Apparently, they hide codes in these watches, like in the mechanical pieces.
The list is in there.
The list is inside. Bro, just whisper it to someone. Like,
Spyglass memorized it.
Spyglass memorized it. Why are we putting this in a $5,000 watch?
Right.
Oh, it's more than $5,000 for sure.
I'm sure that was really expensive.
I had to look up these watches because I was curious about it. And I had to look up like the correct way to say it. I was using Google to find it. And I guess they're called Carl F. Buchar.
You did great.
Yeah, thank
you. Good job.
It was a Monero watch. That was
David
not my factoid.
David Leake is a brand ambassador. That's why they put those watches in there.
Oh, there you go.
Interesting. I just feel like it's such a bad idea to put your secrets. Like, that's the first thing a mugger is going to want from you if you get, like, not even another spy, just some rando
on your
bougie-ass
watch.
You'd be better off putting it in your fucking wallet.
You need those calculator watches that nobody gives a shit about.
The Casio.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Casio watch. That's what we're looking for.
It's also a thing in John Wick. The watch situation is a thing in John Wick.
They like trinkets and stuff.
Manual movement watches, I can tell you.
Well, then we get another fight scene, Greg, because she goes to his apartment.
Yes.
The dead guy. Her dead friend, who it seems like they had a relationship, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And then we get a Lorraine basically breaking a bottle over David's head. Is that what happens here?
No, that's later.
We're in the apartment.
We're in the apartment, not the hotel.
We get the George Michael fight scene.
Oh, wait.
Which is good.
Yes, yes. It's very romantic. It's a romantic fight scene, if you will.
We also get a Wilhelm scream, which is always fun.
Yes.
You familiar with this, Greg?
Yes, yes.
Okay, that was great.
All right, well,
we also find out that Percival's the worst spy of all time. Worst? Like, oh, I forgot we were friends, and there's a photo of us in his apartment.
Yeah. Did I not tell you that? There's a picture of us in the apartment that I knew you were going to, and I also told people you were going to.
Yeah.
No big deal. But this has one of the one stunts she doesn't do, which is the jump with the hose.
Okay.
Off the balcony?
Off the balcony. That one is not her.
Okay.
She beats the crap out of these guys in this scene. And she's just, so she's hiding around a corner. And of all the weapons in an apartment to grab, she grabs, like, when I saw it, I was like, is that a water hose? I was like, does she have like a double lasso? Like, she's made two loops out of a water hose and this is what she's going to fight with?
Mm-hmm. It gives me more Bourne vibes than John Wick. It's like, let me pick a random thing in this room and turn it into a weapon.
Well, he was also Matt Damon stuntman in the Bourne Identity. So that could contribute to that.
Yeah. Very Jackie Chan.
Very Jackie Chan, all tied together. She ties the end of the water hose around a dude's neck to basically make him an anchor.
Yep.
She runs and jumps over a balcony. There's a lot of trust that dude's not going
to
untie.
She's just kind of eyeballing the distance to the floor, too. I think this will work.
Yeah. Otherwise, I break both my legs.
There was a lot of trust in a lot of her movements there. So, yeah, kudos to her. It worked out.
She also, when she's down on the street and the two police officers come to stop her, she puts her turtleneck up over her
Why?
Nose and mouth?
Because her shock white blonde hair is not going to give her away if they start looking for her later, you know? Like, what the fuck?
Obviously, to disguise her face, which, clearly. Greg, if I've had turtlenecks before, and if I put one on, I do that too. I always put it up first and look up in the mirror, and then I put it back on.
Look at it like cool. this. It's just,
yeah, it's very it. Cool. Yeah. Joe, are you doing that because you want to be like a ninja?
Of course.
Okay.
He's like, I'm manifesting my ninja self.
For your birthday this year, I'm just going to buy you ninja gear. I'm going to buy you like some smoke bombs or some of those.
Anytime.
Those nunchucks, spiky, perhaps. Those spiky floor jacks.
I love ninja stuff. You know, the guy who plays Spyglass, Eddie Marsan.
Mm-hmm. So good.
He's in a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. He's very good. He's a
character actor, but he usually has larger parts. Like, it's not bit parts in anything.
I was just going to say, they really did not utilize him well here. He is not in this movie very long. He's very important. He does not have many lines, and he does not live very long.
Is this the same guy that was in Ray Donovan?
Yes.
Yeah. He also was in The Gentlemen. He was in Sherlock Holmes. He was
knew him from World's End.
World's End. Wait, which Sherlock Holmes? And everything. Game of Shadows.
Okay. Not the series. You're talking about the movie.
The movie.
Robert Downey Jr. ones.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Got it. All right. So moving forward, then we get into a situation where Lorraine meets up with David and breaks a bottle over his head. Am I right?
He's just been trying to get to that. He's like, if we get to, I just want to get to the hotel scene.
Yeah. Which is great. She hasn't met the French photographer yet, right? Or has she?
No, I think that's after this when she goes out.
Originally a man. They changed her.
Mm-hmm.
They changed that character around to give this a little more
make it provocative,
feel,
he said.
Which I like. Yeah. I like that. Let's do it.
Shake it up.
Yeah.
I got to point out that when she met up with David for the first time and like she turns around and pins him to the ground, he never loses his cigarette.
Until she takes it from
talking with it in his mouth.
Yeah. Like it was like he gets hit over the head with the glass. He gets spun to the ground, gets pinned. Cigarette's still there, baby.
Yeah.
They smoke so much in this movie that they asked to cut one of the smoking scenes toward the end.
There's so much smoking.
They were like, kalmate with the smoking.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like it's too bad. Looks bad on the screen. Like it's.
I guess so. I guess they were just like, they're like making it look cool or something. I don't know. But they were asked by the studio.
Take enough of it out because I started smoking today, guys. So.
You were like, it just looked too cool. It just looked too cool.
I'm very easily influenced. Yeah. So I'm on board.
You know, I was thinking about this and smoking has been taken out of movies a lot. Older movies had way more smoking in it. Mm-hmm. But when I look at movies now, there's not many movies where they can make someone look cool smoking. And I don't think anyone in this movie does. All I can think about is, my God, that hair must smell so bad.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's just so weird that people smoked all the time.
Yeah.
Like nonstop. I mean,
even when I was in college, you could smoke in bars still.
Yeah.
Do you think that movies in the future are just going to be people popping Zins all the time?
I think smoking, unfortunately, is coming back. Like, I'm seeing it more in movies in general. Oh, like, it's becoming more of a thing. And I'm seeing people just smoke. I travel a lot for work, and I see actual humans smoking in real life. It feels like way more. It's like a trend.
Wow.
What movie did we watch recently, Mackenzie? And I was like, oh, it's shocking that they had the good the main character in this, a smoker, when no one else in the movie really smokes. Ready or not. Samara Weaving's character in that is a smoker. And it's like, no one else in the movie is really smoking, but and she's the main character, the good guy in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And, smokes the whole time.
Maybe that's a commentary on where we're heading, guys. It's not going to be that great. Anyway, Greg, we get we know that the she meets the French photographer. We got to talk about that. I don't really know why that's in here except to give her some character depth, I guess. I don't know, because that girl doesn't really move the story forward. Like, you could have not had her character performing any of the tasks and it would have not changed the plot.
I'm halfway there with you, Joe. I was like, I liked the initial reveal when she like catches her and they have this emotional moment and she's like, I got into this for the thrill. Like she is being a spy for the wrong reasons, basically is what she says. And there's this emotional moment. But then as soon as it segues into like, oh, now we're going to have girls making out and like a female sex scene. No problem with that. But I was like, this feels like we knew what we were going for in this. Like, yeah, this is what this is here for.
Yeah.
And it's for a specific audience. I'm here for it. But like, I felt a little forced to me. I'm along with you.
Yeah. Well, every time they show either of those girls, they're always dressed to the nines. And then when they're home alone, they're always wearing like lingerie, just lounging in lingerie. And
both are great, though. That's great.
Mackenzie, can you bring a female perspective to this? Is this what girls do? Obviously. I've seen you dressed up. You do dress up a fair amount.
I do dress up a fair amount. You know, yeah, obviously. And we do like pillow flights and we definitely only wear underwear and really like lacy, sexy bras just walking around, you know, full makeup too. Don't forget.
I knew
full makeup. Yeah. So she's in the movie, I guess, for that. I don't know.
I think honestly it's supposed to show that Charlize Theron's character will do anything, right? Like,
yeah,
there's not an implication that she is straight specifically at the beginning, you know, only. It's like, I'm willing to either, maybe I am bi, or maybe I am an opportunist and I will do whatever to exploit this source. And when she's being interviewed
do anything, do you mean that she will like, that she's still in spy mode and just having sex with somebody she has zero interest in? Or are you saying she'll do anything, like she's impulsive and is just like...
No, I think she's using her as a source. I think she's cultivating a source. I think that's the implication, right? Like, she could also... They have a couple honest moments there, right? Like, they even call it out of, your face changes when you're telling the truth. And she's like, shit, okay, shouldn't let that happen. But she kind of, I think, lets her guard down around this kid because she does see her as this like novice kid spy. But she is, I think, using the sexual relationship to exploit her as a source. I think that's supposed to be the implication.
If she sees her as a kid, that makes it even more fucked up, Mackenzie.
You know,
spy, don't make it weird. Go.
When I was watching this, I texted Joe before before the sex scene even happened, and I asked Joe, this character supposed to be
sex?
I said, is this character supposed to be straight, gay? Like, what's the deal here? Mm-hmm. And there were other indicators that led me to believe that she was like into girls.
I think she's fluid. Like, I don't think she is like has a problem with it per se, but I think the nature of the relationship is about some kind of exploitation. And I think Percival tees it up for her. You know, he's like, hey, why is she following? She's like, why is this girl following me? And she's like, he's like, you're hot. What do you think? And she's like, okay, well, that's an option. I can leverage that, you know? And I think that's all it's about. I don't think she has a problem with, you know, exploiting her own sexuality for a source.
Interesting. Deeper moments in this movie that I didn't pick up on.
Well, then she tries to go. She does go to the east to try and meet up with Spyglass, and she gets chased a little.
She gets chased into that theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get another fight scene, which is good.
She beats
the fight scenes are like moving up in quality.
Yes, she beats the shit out of that dude with a ladder and a bookshelf.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That guy is like the biggest guy in the movie.
Sorry, go ahead, Joe.
No, please.
I was going to say, I know you guys always do your hard moments, and I specifically wrote mine down, and it was the key to the cheekbone.
Oh, just yeah.
Hanging out of his
straight
face
up
while they're still fighting.
In his face. Like, whew.
And you know, they left it hanging for
a minute.
Couple minutes.
Yeah.
That was a cool
thing. That actor's name is Daniel Bernhardt. He's another of the 8711 stunt team. He's like a very accomplished stuntman and martial artist. Did you guys watch the series Barry at all?
Yes.
Okay. Do you recall the episode where there's that child martial artist and the father that Barry has to deal with?
I don't. I watched it through once.
Okay. It's like a 20-minute fight scene in that show. And that guy is Daniel Bernhardt.
Okay.
So he's like, he pops up a lot and he's always like an antagonist who is going to be someone that you have to fight for a long period of time. So I was not surprised that he was in this movie at all.
He like refuses to die in this too.
Yes.
Every time
he really thinks
he's dead, he just keeps coming back.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Well, what was that, Mark? Oh, Mark says that the keys to the face was hard. Hard. I'm just want to get to the fight, dude. So
there's a couple there. Yeah, there's a couple other little things that happen here. And like the storyline just gets like kind of convoluted and
it's very muddled.
Yeah, it's very muddled. You have a hard time understanding what's going on.
There's like a watchmaker and he knows about the list and all this stuff and
Stiglitz from Inglorious Bastards.
Yeah. We need the list, also, but we
yeah.
We get Charlize Theron's character Lorraine meeting up with Skarsgård at one point on a rooftop.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. He's like a fixer.
Yeah, he's in this movie for a minute. Not really sure. I don't have much to say about him.
What's weird here is that we have the list that's out there that we don't know where it is. The physical list. And we, the audience, know that it's in the watch, but no one else does except for, I guess, Percival knows. We also have Spyglass, who is a Stasi officer who has been recruited by Percival. So he is going to betray the Soviet Union, defect to the West, and he has memorized the list. So they're basically like, we got this. We kind of have the list anyway because we got this guy. So we have two versions of this. Let's get the guy across the wall over to the West, and we're going to be able to move forward because we basically had the list in his head. He can tell us everything.
Yes. Right before that happens, we get a scene where Lorraine she makes a phone call and she finds out that Satchel is like a double crosser or something like that. And it's the scene where she's wearing the black and white dress and she matches the black and white lamp next to her.
Cool visual. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting observation.
I was like, I see where they're going with this black and white. Got it.
I mean, honestly, Greg, as you're going through these bullet points of the plot, though, I'm realizing, like, again, I'm just, so much of this movie was unnecessary. Like, they probably could have trimmed 15 minutes from this of the quote unquote plot, just made it all action. It probably would have been a better final product.
What was that Statham movie? Crank? Is that
Crank, where you just can't stop? Yeah.
There's like no plot at all.
It's just adrenaline. Mm-hmm. Seek out adrenaline, do whatever you have to do. That's the plot.
This one is like half a step away from that. It's like, this is if you took Crank and you said, let's add some plot to it, right?
What if they were spies?
What if they were spies? Okay, so we get them trying to get Spyglass across the bridge, and we get some charades with umbrellas opening to hide everybody all at once.
Cool.
I think that's fun. Yeah.
And then we get Percival, during like the scattering of everyone like getting across the bridge, Percival takes a shot at Spyglass.
Well, he does that because he has already told the Soviets, this is the guy. We know that he is a double agent. He is selling these secrets to the Soviets. He says they're gonna cross during this protest, put a sniper up there, you can shoot him. The umbrellas basically ruin that option. So then he's like, well, I'm going to have to shoot him right now before they cross, which is what he does. And that basically starts the action scene.
Yes. This is where the movie finally starts to pay off. And we get Lorraine and Spyglass. They're running away, trying to hide. Spyglass is bleeding. They run into a building. They take an elevator up. And when they get to the top of the elevator, there's some, I think they're Russian KGB guys waiting at the staircase.
So she says, I had a question for the group here. She goes to the building where the sniper is. Because remember, she takes the
mirror off the car.
Mirror off that car. Isn't that the build? She's going into the building to deal with them first before mm-hmm. she can cross, correct?
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out because I didn't understand why at first she immediately is like, wait here, I'm going upstairs. But that makes a lot. I forgot about the mirror thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was like, why is she leaving him? Why would you got to escort this guy? She's like, I'm going to go upstairs. Like, what if they come in? But no, they can't come in because they're in the building. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Greg, go on.
Cool. Cue the best fight scene of the movie. She basically, I'm going to get technical here. My favorite part here, and this is probably my hard moment, where she takes the dude's arm and breaks it over her shoulder
and then does like what they call a drop Sayanagi over the stairs and like just throws the dude. She beats the brakes off of this dude. Both of
she
them.
She does There's it two... twice.
Yeah.
She does the Sayonagi twice. Sayonagi is a judo throw.
Yes.
Where you're throwing somebody over your shoulder. She does it twice. But I mean, this, I could not tell that this was not one shot.
It was.
Oh, it's awesome.
There's 10 minutes of it that's a one shot. It's the
Didn't they stick fight some of it together?
Spliced. No, it's the other fight that's spliced. Oh, the stairwell scene is a 10-minute
Warner.
I wonder
how many times
they had to do this. That's awesome. Okay. The, one of the
I
guys
think it was
out.
One take because they rehearsed it so much. Like, that's one of the
thing.
That's one of the things that he talks about. No. That's one of the things that he talks about her, about Charlize Theron. Like, we're talking about how she becomes this incredible action star. He's like, she's one of those actresses, and she attributes it to her dance training, who For can sure. memorize every single move. And like, you change one move and she still remembers it later. So he attributes this whole scene going off without a hitch because she could remember every single step. And I think they did it in one take because they had rehearsed it over and over and over.
That's incredibly impressive. The thing that I think helps in this movie is that it doesn't need to be super technical from like a visual standpoint. It looks messy, and I think it's supposed to.
Right.
It's like super visceral. She Authentic. Deals with the first. Yeah. So she goes into the building. She deals with two guys first, like kind of like in a landing and a stairwell. And as she's going up, she deals with two more and then the final guy. Mm-hmm. It's five total, I think, right? Not six. I think it's five.
I think five, yeah.
Because she shoots. No, it is six. But she shoots that one dude immediately. So she
says. He says, "Don't shoot."
Yeah.
She remember. We'll get to that. But the guy's coming into the door. She shoots him in the head.
Before oh yeah.
They even have. Yeah. So she's only fighting five people, but she's dealing with six assailants. But I think if I'm picking between this fight and any fight in John Wick, I like this better than all of them.
Oh personally. Wow.
I think it's more. I like the realism and gritty. I like that it's not, it's super gritty. It is not clean. And some of the, there are some fights, especially in the John Wick movies, it's probably because Keanu Reeves is almost 60 years old, that you can tell the rehearsal and it's like, you do this and I do this. And mm-hmm. this movie does not really look like that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. The John Wick looks a little more clunky.
At times I think it does. And part of that is because these movies are 2.5 to 3.5 hours long and there's 15 versions of this fight in a John Wick movie. But this to me was like, she's like fighting for her life, literally.
Versus choreographed is what you're saying. Like that yes. John Wick's so choreographed and this looks like a real fight to the death kind of
yes.
thing. I agree with that. Yes. I think she looks like you, it's almost like you can see her face swelling in real time. And
oh my God.
I think that's
yeah.
because
her hair is getting bloody.
She's genuinely getting hit. Like she has got yeah. taken a lot of hits and you can see it, the realism of this fight in real time. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Because the part where it breaks is the roll down the stairs. That's the only other part she didn't do. And like that's the moment that the shot stops and it's her stunt woman and she rolls the rest of the way, the bottom part. But like up until yeah. then, you're seeing her face the whole time. You're seeing her reactions mm-hmm. the whole time.
There's no cuts.
Right.
There's no quick cutting. There's no, we're seeing the back of her
right.
head and it's actually somebody else. Those right. are like, as a fight movie guy, when I see that, I'm like, all right. I mean, come on.
I'll also say, though, when we're comparing to John Wick, I think what this has going for it is John Wick does a lot of that gun-fu, where yeah. it's so yeah. much of it is handgun-based. And this yes. first segment of the three segments of these fights, it's all this hand-to-hand, and she's fighting against people who have guns, but it's just this brutal combat for this long stretch of time. I love that one. When the last dude is like bleeding out, like knows he's defeated, but still tries to stab her like one more time. And she just grabs the knife and like puts him out of his misery. But then I thought to the John Wick point, the next fight, the two guys, they just get killed with guns. I was like, oh, that was a lot easier than the first fight. Just yeah. like fucking shoots him right away.
Yeah. But, yeah. That knife guy, she takes the knife from him. That's the one that she breaks his arm and throws him over the stairs. Before she does that, she takes the knife, jabs it in his neck, and then punches it multiple times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
But it's, again, it's like she, I mean, she's a smaller framed person. She's dealing with two people. She shoots that first guy, the bearded guy with the hand tattoos. She shoots him immediately, and he fights her the whole time.
Yep.
He doesn't die until he falls backwards, which that stunt was nuts, where he falls, he's like mm-hmm. standing on the edge of the top of the stairwell and like immediately falls back and they don't cut that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh shit.
Oh, like where it leaves like the blood splatter on the stairs.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was
then,
cool.
And then the guy, when he falls and then she falls down, the guy throws the bag at her and you're like, what's in there? And it turns out it's rifle parts. She tries to assemble it quickly, but can't get it assembled fast enough. Like, that's, I don't know. I just feel like this is like super messy and it makes it way more intense. I've seen this movie more than once and it's always an intense fight scene because of the way it's shot. And she is so good at it seeming real. Like, this is a trained person, but it doesn't, it seems like she's scared, which obviously you would be, even if you have experience. She fights those first two guys. Then she shoots the other guy, fights the second guy. And then the big guy that she stabbed in the face with the keys earlier, she has to deal with him. And that's like,
is pretty rough.
Is that the one that like grabs her and chokes her and like calls her a bitch?
Yeah.
And then she grabs,
she's
like,
am I a bitch now?
Yeah.
She has the corkscrew. Yeah.
Yeah. She corkscrews him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, arguably
again,
more
it's
so.
Like the little things. It's the little things in action movies when they're both, again, winded as fuck. It's this brutal, long struggle. And then when she sees the corkscrew and tries to get up and then falls backwards against the wall, and then the other guy again tries to get up and falls too. I just, little things in action movies can make it so great.
Well, I think she like genuinely feels so tired. Like, you can feel, because she is also having to work almost harder than them. Because to Joe's point, like, she is so much smaller than them. She's having to do like full body weight work here to try and actually win this fight. She is notably smaller than them, and so I think you really feel her exhaustion, and it really sells it. And of course, they're tired too. But I just mean, you look at her and you're like, damn, how is she still upright? How is she upright at the end of this? And she she crushes it.
Well, they get him out. They survive. She survives. She kills all of them.
Well,
they get out.
Yes. Yeah. Go on, Joe.
I mean, it's just, it's so,
for
it's,
another 5 minutes.
Yeah. I guess he kind of tries to help her. He does hit the guy with a bottle or something.
He saves her once. Pan.
Yeah. But
she needed a breather at that time, so it worked out
for
great.
Sure. Yes. Yes. He is like patched himself up kind of from his bullet wound.
Duct tape. They does everything.
Yeah, they get to the street and she basically disarmed one of the guys. She takes a police car, which is great.
And then Corkscrew Face comes and jumps on the car again.
Still alive.
Nuts.
He gets shot now, like multiple times.
And run over.
So
we never see him again after that. So for all we know, he's still alive.
He could be still going.
My God, if they brought him back in the sequel and he had like a corkscrew like scar on him, I'd be like, this is the best movie ever.
That whole car sequence reminded me so much of Children of Men. When they use the car sequence of them being pursued and whatnot, it's all like in there, like sort of between the driver and passenger seat. There's a lot of really cool stuff in that part.
Good stuff. This is I think this was a short chase, but very effective, Greg.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's not a lot here, but it's very good.
Yeah. And right when you think they're home free, that's where they get sideswiped and knocked into the water.
Yeah. And this is where the unfortunately, Spyglass freaking drowns.
We never even got his real name.
Yeah. What is his name?
I don't think
is his first name Spy and his last name Glass? Is it two names?
Taking like elementary school pictures, it was Glass, comma Spy. Yeah.
I think so.
They actually, I'm looking at the cast list. They
credit him as Spyglass. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that car sinking sequence is really pretty. As fucked up as the situation is, when they show that external of like the bubbles and stuff and the water,
it's so surface, well done.
And then his death is just heartbreaking to watch.
Yeah.
It's like
it was so heartbreaking to the degree that the AD and a couple of the producers watching while it was filming thought he was actually drowning, and they were yelling at David Leitch to cut the take. And he was like, no, he's just acting. I promise you he's acting. And he turned out to be right. So he held the line and was like, no, he's fine. He's fine. But other people on set thought he was actually drowning.
Holy shit.
This feels like a good point to add factoid number three.
Oh, wow.
Charlize Theron wears a 9.5 shoe.
Why did you do it here, not when she's hitting the guy with her high heel?
It just felt more appropriate here.
It's too close.
I was gonna say the heel's the perfect time. Yeah. Also, it's Charlize. I feel like she's gonna be really upset at us. It's Charlize.
Oh yeah, Charlize there. Yeah.
Oh, it's not Char. It's not C. It's not a hard C.
It's not a hard C.
I read that her last name in Afrikaans, because she's from South Africa, is actually Tyrone.
Tyrone, yeah.
Tyrone, not Theron, how we say it. Yeah. But she's never corrected me,
that.
So.
Yeah, we're not editing that.
Why is she have the most complicated name ever? Listen, 9.5 shoe, you're welcome.
I wear a 10, so I got her beat.
Dang. Wait, how tall are you?
I'm not tall enough for that size foot. I will say I'm 5'6". You would think I would be taller. How tall is she?
5'11". No, 5'10".
Dang. 5'10". Yeah, I think she's 5'10".
Wow.
We all thought I was going to be taller, okay? Okay? I don't need you to rub it in, Greg.
You could have lied to me.
I don't know. Lamar would call me out. Let's be honest.
Absolutely, I would.
All right.
Hey, this guys, now I'm confused because what's the deal with this? She gets spied on. She finds the bug in her jacket.
Yeah.
That was Percival when he
Percival
took her
put it there.
Okay. How she knows that he's the double agent.
Correct.
It's how she knows that he knew where she was, all these different conversations that were happening. It's how she knows that he's put these things together that he shouldn't know. She's like, how did he know I was doing X, Y, Z, whatever? And that's how she knows.
That's right. And this is why Percival goes. So now, Percival spyglass is gone, which
Delphine's
means she
house.
Still needs the list.
Delphine? Yeah,
she still
Delphine? Needs
Delphine.
Delphine?
Delphine, yeah.
Yeah. He goes to Delphine's house and
kills her.
Well, when he goes to kill her, he gets stabbed in the shoulder. And that's what Lamar was talking about at the beginning. It's comical, really, where he bumps the wall and stabs himself.
Yeah, his reaction's classic. I love it.
There's one thing I didn't like about that fight. I mean, first, what I'm realizing is after we got off the car crash, I'm like, I don't really care about the rest of this movie. Like, I can kind of check out for the next 20 minutes, but you guys keep going by all means. But I was going to say, like, the one thing I didn't like about that fight scene is that he has the drop on her. He shows up and gets her in a strangle with like a wire or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She manages to fight out without even a weapon. I feel like if you have the drop, and I know this is suspension of disbelief, but she is not as good of a spy or fighter as Charlize is in this. So like, I didn't like that he has her. She breaks free without the help of any. Usually they'll have like a weapon that's conveniently over here that you can stab to break free. They fight, struggle for a couple more minutes. She kind of gets the better of him, but then he just puts her back in the thing and chokes her out anyway. I just didn't like that the fight ended the same as it started, and it's like somehow this time he's overpowering her. It felt weird.
Yeah, for a movie that's got great fights, this was like weirdly bad.
Yeah.
I don't know what we were doing here. It's like maybe the stunt director was like, I don't want to schedule this one up. You guys just figure it out.
I wonder if it's supposed to be because she's not great. You know what I mean? Like
that could be.
You know, like it's going to be a messier, like shittier fight because she's so new here, you know? Like,
that could be it.
I don't know.
That could be it.
We get Percival basically talking to the camera now.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is when he's,
This was strange to me.
He loves the lifestyle. He just loves the lifestyle, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. He likes this black market shit. He likes being, you know, chief of station and like at the center of this underworld. Like he doesn't want things to change or the wall to fall. Like he's the king of this little castle. And that's what he's trying to prevent from changing.
And it's interesting that they have the wall come down literally as this movie is closing. Mm-hmm. Because to me, it's almost like, I guess we don't know if you are in that time frame, but the Soviet Union, the wall coming down is like the end of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
So this list and all this stuff is kind of like semi-inconsequential at this point, really.
I think
level?
That's what they kind of say, right?
Yeah.
He says, or Percival says, it was all for nothing at the end of the day. I actually, you guys tell me, because I might just be reached grasping at straws here, but when they had the Kurt Loder from MTV back in the day
Loder.
Clip, and he's talking about sampling, and he's like, the new controversy is sampling. I was like, is this meant to be here? Because it's like, now we look back on that controversy as no one gives a shit anymore. And
that's
is it
what
the
I
same way
it.
With the wall falling, you know?
Yeah, where it's like, this was so important, and now that another cataclysmic event happened and it rendered all of this completely moot, basically, is what I thought, too. Mm-hmm.
So now...
And you got to have a Kurt Loder appearance in the 90s.
So now
it's 1990. Such a throwback, man.
People
like
from E6 can go to Jackalope, and the people from Jackalope can go to Shangri-La?
Pretty much. Except, that's just like an uneven comparison. It's probably my fault. But because basically, the West people, if we were doing this in Austin, they wouldn't have anything.
Yeah. I was going to say, when you say West, are you talking about where the street name changes or are you talking about 35 as a dividing
East,
line?
East Berlin was like, I think Congress is technically the split, if you want to get real.
Yeah.
Congress is the East-West
split. So Dirty Six plus Shangri-La and east of 35 is all east. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
But that makes
it would be
like...
flipped because it's in West Berlin. Like West Berlin is where all the rights and the music and the pop culture and blah, blah, blah were.
Yeah. Mm. So It would be the opposite of that, Greg. So just sit with that.
Non-Austinites are having a blast with this segment.
They're like, this, no, we don't get it. They're like, can we just stick with West and East Berlin? Like, I got that by itself. Yeah.
This is all Greg's problem. Greg started this. He wanted to compare.
My apologies. My apologies. Wait, what was that, Mark? Oh, Mark says, no, it was me that came up with this idea.
I knew it.
Well, this is where she kills Percival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess she knows that the list is in the watch because she takes his watch.
Uh-huh.
But we never really see her learn where the list is. Right.
Yeah, that's don't look too much
was
into
it the
story.
Photo
hey,
that she took
I think
from...
she's supposed to learn that from the Russians because she's, again, a triple agent and the Russians know it's in the watch.
Yeah, and we don't as the audience.
How about that fight scene on the stairs, guys?
Yeah, exactly. I know.
Remember how much fun that was?
Well, this is where it feels like this movie is we're done, right? And we're not. We're not done.
We get a cool line, though, where she says it's a double pleasure to deceive the deceiver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool.
Said it earlier, too. So it's like a nice little callback.
Yeah.
Sorry, my brain is still broken because if she, like, she's been working with the Russians this whole time, right? So they already know where the data is in the watch. Why did they not? They didn't know that Percival was
a
traitor.
They didn't get it though. Like, I don't think that they have actually gotten to it. They are trying to prevent it from getting out, but they know that the watch is the target. And so they're trying to get to it, but they've told her that's the target, like, get the watch. And so I think that's why.
Percival's plan is just to take the watch. He wants to kill Spyglass because that devalues the watch. And then he wants to just take it back to England. And that's his. And get
remember, he said,
"For being a hero." Okay.
Yeah, I'd be on the way to getting a hand job
from the queen,
which he ad-libbed. Awesome.
Yes.
Great line.
That's pretty funny.
I guess we're moving on to Paris, where Lorraine is not blonde anymore. She has dark hair.
Right.
She is meeting with Bremovich, who is the KGB station chief who we've kind of been dealing with. He calls her Satchel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh,
as soon as she walks in,
Comrade
Percival,
Satchel.
But it isn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now he wants to kill her because he's like, oh, she's the triple. I'm going to eliminate her now.
Because Percival told him about her. Yeah.
Right.
We could see the dude laying down the tarp in the background.
Yeah, not a good sign.
Yeah.
This is also a pretty good shootout. A lot of slow-mo stuff. A lot of feathers flying from pillows, which is cool. She kills everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Bremovich, pretty violent death here. Shot in the neck, bleeding a lot. Then she talks to him and tells him, hey, I'm actually...
Explains all of us what happened in the movie.
I'm a triple agent. And then shoots him in the forehead, which is, you know, good stuff. Good action here. And then she gets on the plane with John Goodman, who was the CIA contact, who we thought was kind of playing dumb or just kind of like a tag-along type of character, who's actually her real handler because she's a triple agent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now she's working with the CIA. And that's the movie. And that sets us up for
two. She drinks a Bud Light.
Yeah.
I like some nuggets in that last scene, though. I like how they ask her to go be a professional and stand on the plastic, which I was like, it's so laughable. Cool, yeah. You're like, really? Is she gonna? And then I don't know if
would you do it?
No, absolutely not. I'm not gonna go stand. I'm not gonna make your job easier. Like, we're gonna fight to the death. There's gonna be blood everywhere, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm about to start peeing on everything.
I was gonna intentionally poop my pants and make it really awkward, like, for them to clean up my body.
We're gonna make it a mess.
I did like when she leaves and Bill Skarsgård's there, presumably with a team
to
clean the room.
Yeah.
And he looks like, oh man, this is like a lot to clean.
This is a lot.
Which looks like, yeah, I don't know. That doesn't look like a good task.
My other favorite shot.
The headshots in that sequence were awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of really great, like, this is where the gunplay, I think, comes more into play than it has up to now, which I don't know if it's supposed to be intentional. Like, in these Russian fight scenes, it's going to be different. I don't know. But it was a good time. And one of my favorite shots, I don't know if y'all saw, is that the gunshot splatters onto the head painting behind, right on the mouth, and it's
the
like this, like the red lips, and I was like,
very good,
That was nice. Nice touch.
That was
nice
cool. Touch. Very nice cool. Touch.
Yeah.
That's our movie, Greg.
Yeah. Lamar, what do you rate this movie?
You guys do out of 5 or out of 10?
You could do it whatever you normally do.
We usually do out of 10.
Okay.
And if on a first watch, despite this being top tier action, I cannot overstate. If you get an opportunity to just watch that 20-30 minute sequence, you'd have a great time. But aside from that, I really did not enjoy most of the film. I'd go like 6.5. I also think there was some comedy and like not a ton of comedy in this, but I liked the one line where when we move from the female hookup scene, they cut back to the interrogation room and he's like, so you made contact with the French operative.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And like Joe, I'm always a sucker for an 80s soundtrack, whether it's
so good.
Wedding Singer or what was the other one that I'd written down? Grand Theft Auto Vice City. Like I'm always going to be here for an 80s soundtrack. So, but 6.5 at the end of the day with 10 for the action scene, 6.5 for the movie.
Mackenzie, what would you rate it?
I'd probably give it a 7. Like I still think it's a great time. It's got good action sequences that I think are fun. I do think that the story, like we said, is a little convoluted, but like I kind of get it. Like I think it's interesting. I mean, I think ultimately there's not a ton of plot holes. Like I think it's fun to follow, but I don't think there's like massive gaps here where it just straight up doesn't make sense. So I think it closes some of those loops a little better than it kind of feels on a first watch. And I just, I'm a sucker for the action sequence. I'm a sucker for her performance. I just think she so fucking commits to the bit and crushes it. And so, I just still think it's an enjoyable watch and it's visually stunning as well as the music as well. Like I know that it's not era appropriate, but they're doing that because these are the songs that we know, right? So I feel like I think it comes together to be a really fun action flick for sure.
Joe, we rate it 1 through 5, so you got to go by that system.
Yeah, I was trying to do math to get it to 10, but we can do our 5. This is 3. 3 out of 5 for me. This is a 5-star fights. Mm-hmm. Potentially, I think this hallway, the elevator, Jesus. I think there is some elevator action.
Yeah, the staircase elevator fight scene.
Yeah, the apartment scene to me is... it's like in a top 5 fight scene of the last like 25 years for me, honestly. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's everything I want in a fight scene. I can tell that the performer is doing the fights. It does not quick cut so that I am, they're disguising the performer isn't that good at doing this. It's super raw. It's not as choreographed. Mm-hmm. There's some judo in it, which I appreciate. I would prefer some jujitsu, but that's fine. We didn't really do jujitsu corner, Greg.
It was the drop Sayanagi, the Harai Goshi, with the knife in the neck combination. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, it does, there are some, I just feel like if they had just eliminated one of the double and triple crosses, I think it just is way tighter and it's not as like, you're not like, what's going on now? There was definitely times where, and I've seen this movie before and I was like, wait a minute. Percival doesn't know, or he does. I don't know. And then I was just like, well, Charlize is great, and the soundtrack's great, and these fights are awesome. So I'll just kind of let it wash over me until we get another fight scene. And that's at least how I feel about this. Three out of five.
Validate my rating a little more for anybody who's like offended. Like, I don't think anybody else here is, but for listeners, like, I think the best John Wick movie, I get them all muddled together, but if I were to pick one that was my favorite, even that would, the highest rated one would probably be like an 8. But I will say to your point, Joe, that action sequence in this will stick with me more than anything from John Wick. I enjoy them more on the whole, this felt unique.
Yeah.
You're going to remember it more because it's so different. You know, like a lot of the John Wick fights feel, to Joe's point earlier, choreographed, like really cool to watch. But can you differentiate between each of them? Right.
Yeah. You know, one thing I want to say to that also, Mackenzie, and don't take this the wrong way, as our lone woman representative. I feel like a lot of fight scenes want to make the female be very like super acrobatic or doing a lot of almost like saying this person's smaller and they're not as strong, so we need to like do other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This other fight antics. Scene is like, we're not going to do that. No. She's going to grapple with these huge guys. She's basically on an equal playing field with her male counterparts, and there's more of them.
Yeah.
Which made me like this like way more.
And I like that they show the ramifications of that too. And I meant to say that earlier, of like, she is bruised and bloody and scratched. And it's not like a lot of these action flicks where you cut to the next day and they look beautiful and their hair is done and they're fine, right? Like,
yeah,
she's
yeah.
in an ice bath, covered head to toe in bruises. Like, I like that too, because like, that is what it's gonna actually look like. And I
agree. Yeah. Make it a point. I thought of this near the end when we flash forward to Paris or wherever it is, but when she's in the brunette wig, and I was like, wait, is she all better? But then they make a close up at the end, you still see the bruise, but there's makeup on it, like she's
good stuff. Her arms still covered in bruises. Like, yeah, it's realistic. Yeah.
I think about that introduction to Black Widow, Scarlett Johansson. I think it's in the second Iron Man, maybe. Where her first like action scene, and it's cool, but she's doing
triple flips gainer, and back flips
and right. This is not that doesn't do anything like that. We're not doing that here, which I think enhances this a lot. Greg, go with your.
I give it like I'm gonna give it the lowest rating. It's what I do. I strive to deliver.
He adjusts his rating based on our rating, guys.
He's like, if it's high, I gotta go low. I gotta be the low.
Like, if I had said 2, he would have been like, this is like a one. 1.75.
I give this one like 2.5. 2.5.
What about the action scenes, Greg?
Okay, action scenes. If I were to remove the action scenes altogether from this movie, I would give this movie a 1. Mm-hmm. But
wow, okay.
But if I just rate the action scenes alone, I agree with the things you're saying. They're top tier, very memorable, very cool, extra gritty. It doesn't feel, I mean, I get it, it's a movie, but it's a lot of times when they do these Hollywood movies, it's like our hero never gets hurt, our hero never gets cut. And so that part adds to it. And like what Lamar was saying earlier, it's like the fight's coming to a slowdown. And they're both struggling to get up.
Yeah.
That really sells the scene a lot. It makes it so much better. So fight scenes, top tier. Fight scenes alone in that hallway elevator is like a 5. They're amazing.
Hard 5. What was your hard moment?
My hard moment was where she takes the dude's own knife, punches it into his neck, breaks his arm, drops Sayanagi's him over the stairs.
Yeah.
Like all of that is excessive. And I love it so much.
Yeah. My hard moment was the second drop Sayonagi.
Oh, yeah.
Very similar.
Yeah.
Lamar, you had, what was your hard moment? You wrote it down.
The key and the fight continuing after it. It wasn't just that it happened. It was that it was hanging there.
It was dangling. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mackenzie, do you have a hard moment for us?
I had a hard time because I would have probably gone key, but now I feel like I can't do that because Lamar took it. So I feel like I got to get creative. But the other one I kind of think of too is the hose. Like, bitch does not know that that's going to work out. You know what I mean? But she's jumping anyway. So I was like that. And just using a hose to begin with. Like, the whole fucking hose situation was wild.
Very good. If you want the key scene, I'll take the sex scene instead. Ayo.
Hey, Mark, Lamar, what did you think your hard scene was?
Well, I agree with Lamar. I think that the sex scene was very, very fun to watch, and I enjoyed myself very much in the movie.
That's great. That's great.
Mark just texted. He rated this a 3 out of 5. He just wanted more neon scenes.
I love the neon scenes. I hard agree with that, actually. The neon is such a cool, like, the way they shoot that is so well done.
The neon reminds me a lot of Sin City with the red.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Like, the contrast, it's cool. I like
your room right now.
Well,
your room is giving me vibes.
It's always a different color.
Yeah, yeah. I can do whatever color you want, Joe.
It's all the lava lamps off screen, right?
I've got 13 lava lamps to my right. It's really warm in here.
Team, this was fun. Yeah. I'm so glad this dovetailed with your pod. We drink and we watch things.
Worked out nicely. Yeah.
Thanks for having us. We can find you on all platforms.
All the things.
Pretty much, yeah.
Subscribe to their pod. We have done, this is our third collab.
And we did Second the Thing and we did Temple of Doom.
Temple of Doom, yeah. Temple of Doom on yours, Thing on ours. Mm-hmm. We're open anytime. We'd love to join. We'd love to have you back. This was great.
Greg, I almost wrangled you guys for Escape from New York right after this. I'm just saying, we were so close.
I mean, Escape from New York is a movie that I don't have to watch to comment prolifically on. I've seen it many times. What are we doing next week, Greg?
So it's confusing because of when the episodes are coming out. I'm not sure what order they're popping off in. I know that the tail end of this month had
Atomic Blonde. We had the Fast and Furious watch along. We've got RoboCop. And I think that's it. We might have one more this season, but
I think we have one more. Yeah, the Burbs got screwed for us.
Burbs have gotten screwed for us twice now, but I'm looking forward to RoboCop. That one's going
to
be good.
We need to hear the Fast and the Furious watch along. Like, I just want.
So we need to pick which one.
Okay.
Do you guys have suggestions? Should we take suggestions? Maybe voting.
But you're a Fast and Furious hater, so I have two questions for you.
Strong hater.
Speak for yourself.
Well, no. I know Joe is. That's what I'm saying. Like, yes. Joe is the hater. I, as you'll recall, in the last episode collab, I was like, you got to watch him. But have you seen any of them?
I've seen most of them.
You've seen most of them. Okay.
I've not seen Tokyo Drift.
Oof. Okay.
I have not seen the one with John Cena.
Okay.
I did not see the newest one with Jason Momoa.
Jason Momoa was a treat. I hated Fast X, and I don't like most Fast and Furious movies, but I hated Fast X. But anytime Jason Momoa was on screen was a delight.
He's better than anybody in the movie, any of the cast members, anyway. I've seen all the other ones, though. The problem is they all run together.
So you can't remember which ones you like better than the others.
I need somebody to be like, it's this one, and this happens.
Janelle's a huge fan of the Fast series, and I think most people would say Fast 5 is the one that reinvigorated the franchise.
It absolutely is. Because there was a dip situation for sure. Yeah. And then it comes back to life. But I think maybe Fast 5 or the first one. I think the first one is a really also now it's the most dated one. So I feel from a watch along perspective, that could be pretty entertaining to listen to also.
I think we were leaning towards the original.
Let's see. Cozy's blowing me up right now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, Mark says.
Mark's going wild on text.
He says
Lovers, the first one, he says 100 eye losses. I don't know what that means. I think he says I'm pissed, not eye losses.
See, this is a great time for me to just bag on Fast and Furious because Mark has been muted.
Just rage texting in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine if the Fast and Furious had this kind of fight scenes. Maybe we'd be saying different things about it, but
maybe.
It doesn't. It just doesn't.
I think you got to go OG. I think that.
Yeah, I
be
think
my
we're doing
vote.
We're doing the first one. It's the easiest. I'm actually going to make fun of it more than you. So
can't wait for that.
Mark says it's about cars and family. It is fighting.
I mean, it is. Greg, it is a lot of fighting.
You want to do our sign off?
Yeah. And I'll do my sign off for Mark. So Joe, we have a sign off now, guys.
I'm excited.
Wow,
it's
can't
been workshopped.
Wait.
It's still not very good. Hold on.
Joe says that part of the charm.
It's going through the notes for me right now.
Is that he has to go find his sign off.
I have it right here.
You're announcing it. You're like, we gotta lead into it. I love it.
I'm Joe, and I'm here to recommend the movies you should see. Greg?
Oh my God.
This is Greg, and I hate pretty much everything. And then we got Mark, who would normally say, I'm producer Mark, and I'm just trying to not get us banned.
That's it, guys. Lamar McKenzie, thanks so much. This was fun.
Thanks, guys.
Mark, I don't know if you can hear us, but you can stop our recording session now.
And we're back-ish. We were there, and now we're back. So thanks for joining, listening to us talk
it's
for
like
quite
an
a while with the guys.
Episode.
This is
like
an
inception.
There's a lot of layers here. Like, I don't know where in the timeline we really are at this point, but it was a good time. I can tell you that it was a great time. As per usual, we're going to have to bring the guys back over here soon as well. Maybe for a fun, I don't know, racing episode. We were maybe teasing out. We'll see. But anyways, we are going to wrap up Action April next week though, with Bullet Train. Which, funnily enough, is the same director, but we didn't mean to do that, but here we are. But I'm also psyched. You had already seen it, right? You've seen it.
Oh, I've seen Bullet Train, I think, 3 times at this point, which is crazy because it came out, 2 years ago? But I friggin' love it. So much fun.
It's such a good time. Yeah. All right. Well, come back and check us out for Bullet Train. But for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.